Your brand deserves better than one-size-fits-all branded clothing. Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your team will want to wear, backed by above-and-beyond expertise. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
Well met, fellow adventurers. We are once again back with Sir Croakington, who, having finished a major adventure, is just wandering around the kingdom. And has come to a tavern in Northwest Helsa called the Other Lair. And we're there now. A large round red door set into the base of the mossy slope, just inside the eastern border of the old North Wood, serve as the entrance to a most curious tavern. And let's look closer at the door. The outline of what appears to be an ant standing on two legs is etched into the middle of the door. What's happening here? Well, in fact, I know exactly what's happening here, because this is the tavern that was commissioned as part of my backing for the Kickstarter in 2019. So, it's my ideas and the GM's genius. And his ideas. Okay, well, probably my rough notes and the GM's genius. The Other Lair, commonly referred to as The Lair by its more frequent patrons, is an establishment owned and operated by the famed adventurer Octopus Doctor, who I'm not sure whether or not is... Not sure whether Octopus Doctor is a doctor, or whether Octopus Doctor is an octopus. Because, of course, octopuses can, you know, disguise themselves, so you never really know who's an octopus. Someone you've known all your life could secretly be an octopus, and there's no way to find out. You know? Yeah, unless they decide to tell you themselves. Anyway, this is Octopus Doctor. He's a powerful guy with 80 in most of the skills. 100 in archery, of course. 93 in weaponry and weaponry slashing. Because got the boring equipment, really. Never used a spruce smasher. Level 70s in all the powers. High-end equipment. But no packages. No real packages going on here. Varkon's Wing of Motley Wonder. The Dragonbone Wing. Zorlan's Wing of Icarnia. Kildred's Serpent Wing. All the stuff. And lots of seasonal event stuff. For late game adventurer, anyway. But with no super powerful boosts. Well, I think, well, maybe? Not quite sure. But not that many. The exterior look of a tavern bears an unsettling resemblance to some sort of hive, through the sounds of merriment drifting out of the half-dozen circular windows suggests an interior atmosphere rife with food, drink, jovial camaraderie. Right, there's a link for hive. Upon second glance, you come to the conclusion the exterior of the tavern actually resembles a large anthill. What's going on here? Well, I know, but for dramatic purposes, I'm saying that. A wooden sign nailed to the post to the left of the door bears a faintly emblazoned message. Let's read this sign. You step up to the wooden sign and examine the message faintly, emblazoned upon its worn timbers. Stay a while, travellers. Wait, I think that's different than it was before. I'm going to refresh. Yeah, it's different. I think it's different. Maybe I'm just remembering it wrong. Or maybe there's something odd going on. Anyway, I'll be going back there later to see if it's the same. Maybe I'm just confusing it with a message somewhere else. Anyway, enter the other lair. The dusty, the musty scent of damp earth mingled with the pungent aroma of wood smoke fills the sunken and cavernous main room of the other lair. A motley collection of battered oil lanterns dangle from the ropes stretched along the massive wooden beams supporting the earthen ceiling. Their combined, spluttering light serving to chase most of the gloom to the far corners of the chamber. Alright, you can look closer at the lanterns. The lanterns strung up along the ceiling beams are the retired lamps of Octopus Doctor, the tavern's illustrious propertier. I don't know if Octopus Doctor retiring so many lamps, but maybe that's probably just something you do off the books because it's not exciting. Just like how you don't feature, and then they stopped for an hour and had sandwiches every three pages because it's just assumed. Unless something interesting is happening, just assume they probably ate 2-3 times every day. They probably slept, and at some and every few hours they go to the toilet, or have some sort of magical contraption that alleviates the need for that. Alright, a throng of high-spirited patrons, some of them fellow adventurers, fills the room, creating a merry din that soars into the rafters, across the ceiling and out of the windows. What is this merry din? You hear the gentle smoothing sounds of a mandolin drifting out of the far corner of the cavernous room. Moving through the crowded space, bearing trays laden with enchanting fare, is a small legion of upright jade fangats. What? Yeah, I know. The peculiar servers seem to garner no undue attention as they methodically tend to their duties. Alright, jade fangants, let's look at them. What's going on here? You carefully observe the upright jade fangants as they move about the crowded tavern on two legs, leaving the other four legs free to tend to a variety of tasks, despite their somewhat human-like gait and posture. The ants never seem to directly engage with anyone, save for a small handful of the property's human servants, who now and again interact with the creatures, apparently providing direction. Okay. Apparently this has been happening for a while. Let's order some food and drink. Renowned for the fortifying nature of its varied fare, unique character and makeup of its ales, the other lair has become a favourite haunt for locals and a preferred stopover for hungry travellers. According to long-standing rumours, the Jade Fang servers are directly involved in the preparation of the tavern's food and the brewing of its ale. Despite their inabilities communicating with patrons, the upright ant servers prowling the common room are capable of understanding and fulfilling any request made for food and drink. So I can order food, ale or palo. Let's order some food. You signal to one of the Jade Fang servers. Oh, that's underlined again. Oh, yeah, it's the same. Okay, that's the same thing we noticed last time. Who, upon receiving direction from a human server, scuttles over and stands silently before you, apparently waiting for you to voice your order for food. All of today's stew. The day's stew, a thick, enticing braise comprised of fish, cabbage and beans proves to be every bit as delicious as its aroma and presentation suggests. After emptying your bowl, you lean back in your chair and spend the next small while observing the seemingly incessant bustle of the tavern's main room. At length, you rise and make your way across the crowded space. Okay, order food and drink. Order food. Let's see if the stew's the same. Today's stew is fish, cabbage and beans again. Okay, I'm going to order it a third time and see if it's still the same. Order fuse, fish, cabbage and beans. Does it change every day? I guess we'll have to come back tomorrow. It might be different. Well, you can come back tomorrow. I mean, it's there. I mean, you've got the... You could go there. It's not an AG place, so you could look for free. Okay, anyway, next thing, order food. Roasted hare. Despite having been roasted well beyond your usual preference, the hare proves both delicious and flavourful. Served on a bed of wheat greens, some of which you're not certain are edible, the charred rabbit is almost more than you can eat. From the end, you manage to leave out not a single wayward scrap on your plate. Having concluded your meal, you stand up to the table and make your way out of the room. Now, presumably, another day has sometimes passed before I eat again, but I've just skipped over that. In fact, these things have been happening over several weeks while I've been doing various adventures in Northwest Tysa. Probably searching for Aldemir's gems, some stuff in Deepwell. Probably going back here from Tarn a few times as well. But we're just smishing it together for narrative convenience. Order food. Smoked trout. The smoked trout is smaller than you imagined, but the entirety of the plate, which includes a wedge of cheese, a thick chunk of hard bread, and a small heap of steamed snails, proves more than enough fare to satisfy your appetite, which is surprisingly large. Sir Croakington's appetite, even though she is very small, she still has a human-sized appetite. For reasons, just reasons. After finishing the generous serving, you spend a few moments observing the bustle around you before rising and making your way across the crowded chamber. Alright, next one. The seasoned bear. As you might expect, the bear, seasoned and blackened to near perfection, is greasy but delicious. Also, sorry bear. Resting atop a mound with mashed turnip and smothered in steamed snails. Snails seem to be a thing around about here. I mean, they're either a little bit French or a little bit bug. Maybe both. The thick steak is among some of the finest fare you've ever tasted. After cleaning off your plate, you rise from the table at which you're seated and stroll across the crowded room. Order food and drink. Alright, we got ordered all the food. Order ale. You signal to one of the Jade Fang servers, who upon receiving direction from a human server, scurries over and stands silently before you, apparently waiting for you to order your ale. The tavern's speciality, known as ale, often proves to be, to say the very least, an interesting concoction. Well, then we'll have that. Ale. So good they named it twice. The ale, a strong, bitter, complex brew, whose ingredients include beetle shell bits, spider eggs and tree sap, is a surprisingly pleasant and fortifying drink. After finishing your flagon and grimacing through an unusual lingering aftertaste, you feel a sense of warmth rising from the pit of your stomach. Awash in a jovial spirit imparted by the strange ale, You make your way across the common room. Finding you now need to take special care with every step. Alright, let's order another ale. Hive Shine Ale. The Hive Shine Ale, the ingredients of which are not disclosed, is a watery brew that leaves behind an aftertaste reminiscent of charred wood. Several minutes after consuming the ale, you find that your field of vision is flecked with a myriad of sparkling blue dots that seem to outline that upon which your eyes focus. After only a few moments, however, the dots fade and your vision returns to normal. Order food and drink. More ale! Morningstar Ale. Hint of honey and a distinct smoky flavour characterises this dark, heady ale. Oddly enough, after consuming only a swallow of the potent brew, you suddenly notice the tavern's grain Jade Fang servers all seem to have adopted an eerie greenish glow. And not just their fangs anymore, all of it. Within just a few moments, the glow fades and you finish what remains of the ale without experiencing any further oddities. Alright, more food and drink. Ale, let's have ale again. Yeah, I thought it was randomised, but nope, same again. Order food and drink. Palo. You signal to one of the Jade Fang servers, who upon receiving direction from a human server, scurries over and stands directly before you, apparently waiting for you to voice your order for Palo. The tavern has two small cauldrons, in which they serve two distinctly different brews of Palo. Palo from the innate cauldron is known as the Goon Paleo, and bears a notorious reputation for its fierce flavour and odd enhancements. The plain cauldron on the left is always filled with Paleo of the more unusual, variety, not unusual, usual, Lagoon Paleo. The Lagoon Paleo, served in a stout earthenware mug, smells and looks just like any other long-brewed pale. However, as you stare down at the vessel's steaming black contents, you're startled when a glob of green ooze suddenly floats to the surface. The unexpected ingredient swiftly sinks back into the murky depths, and you consume the hot, flavourful beverage without hesitation. Now, is the green oozy blob at the bottom absorbing all the paleo flavours and becoming extra delicious? Probably. You know, for a little after-dinner mint. But, you know, squishier. Alright, food and drink. Let's have more of that paleo, Lagoon paleo. Okay, yeah. However, as you stare down at the vessel's steaming black contents, you're startled when a moth wing suddenly floats to the surface. Yes, the unexpected ingredient swiftly sinks back into the murky depths, and you consume the hot, flavourable beverage without hesitation. Yeah, it's a bit randomised. Right, Palo, and now some regular Palo. The Palo, served in a stout earthenware mug, is both strong and exceedingly flavourful. After emptying your vessel, you set it down on the table and lean back in your chair, content to spend a few minutes observing the incessant bustle around you. Oh, and an adventure has been unlocked. It's called Fire and Flame. But we'll leave it, since that's at the bottom of the list, we're going to leave it out for a bit. Seek out the tavern keep. You find the tavern keep, a heavy-set, white-haired man named Lusol, tending to several ale casks along the back wall of the chamber. He cordially greets you and asks if there's anything you need. Well, let's just have a chat. Converse with him. You begin conversing with Lusol and quickly discover that the tavern keep enjoys talking. As he prattles on about things of no particular consequence, you consider attempting to steer the conversation to more interesting topics. and quite ask about the Jade Fang servers. Quite a sight, aren't they? Says Izzel. To be honest, I don't know how we'd manage around here without their help. Suddenly, a look of concern briefly passes over the Tamakeep's face. Still, that would be a different story. The magic that keeps them as they are, you know, white and all that, was to fail. He says, shiver just to think of it. Idrisol excuses himself, bids you farewell, and moves off to tend to one of his many duties. Okay, yeah, and seek out the tavern keep again. Converse. Inquire about the tavern's owner. Our property was, of course, none other than Octopus Doctor, says Idrisol, making mention of the famed adventurer who owns the tavern. He's not here often, though, which should hardly be surprising. After all, he wouldn't have amassed such an incredible collection of accomplishments by spending his days here. The tavern keep goes on to tell you several interesting antidotes, involving Octopus Doctor, before politely excusing himself to tend to one of his many duties. Have you tried the ale? He says as he steps away. You might have a go at it. It's in a rare form today, if you know what I mean. I don't, but good, I guess. All right, tavern keep, bid him farewell and leave. Engage with one of the ant servers. You make several attempts to engage the ant servers, moving around the common room, but the upright Jade Fangs take no apparent notice of you. Seemingly single-minded of purpose, the ant beings regard you as little more than an obstacle around which they efficiently navigate en route to their target locations. You note that each of the ant servers has a small, sparkling green square of stone attached to the base of their rearmost leg. Let's look closer at that. You closely observe the stones attached to the ant's legs and note that every so often a faint greenish glow emanates from the sparkling stone. When this happens, the ants seem to freeze in mid-step for a fleeting instant before resuming their usual swift and accurate movements. Okay, I think, yep, this could definitely... Yeah, if someone were to break those, we would be in a lot of trouble. Well, not quite as much now that I'm here, but... I mean, even after that, they're being, you know... financial trouble. Rather, you know, violent trouble. One of the ants, holding aloft a tray laden with empty tankards, nearly collides with you, but gracefully twists it aside and continues on its way across the chamber. Throw some darts. A round wooden target affixed to the wall to the right of the fireplace serves as the dartboard for what has become a staple competitive entertainment at the other lair. Patrons can often be seen hurling a round of darts, hoping to earn a place on the record. A list of the top scores obtained by those who toss darts at the target. Tribor, perched on a nearby stool, watches closely as darts are hurled at the target, often sharply criticising the owner's aim and techniques. Well, let's just throw some darts first. You reach into a wooden bucket and draw out the first of the 10 well-used iron-eared darts. Several people gather nearby to watch as you prepare to have a go at the target. Dart 1 of 10. You grip the angular dart shaft. Draw back up. Well, okay. Am I doing this as a toad? As a toad... I'm using my massive tongue, even though neither frogs nor toads have those. The wizard that turned me into a toad didn't know that, and gave me a gigantic long tongue, which I use, even though it's inaccurate. Anyway, picking a number, bonus of 42. 22 from agility, 20 from luck. Pick now. 1, 819. For Schweck! The Iron Maiden missile whistles through the air and lodges itself near the centre of the target for 819 points. Hold R2. You grip the angular shaft, draw back your arm and take aim at the target. Yep, it's bonus of 44, agility plus 24, luck plus 20, pick now. Whoosh, whack! The iron-eared missile flies through the air and embeds itself in the inner ring of the target for 289 points. Hold R3. A bonus of 46, 26 from agility, 10 from luck, pick now. Whoosh, whack! Just outside the centre of the target for 579 points. I keep going again, but now it's 48, 28 from agility. Whoosh, whack! Near the centre of the target for 896 points. Well, that's pretty close to as high as it can get. Bonus of 50 now. Near the centre of the target for 812 points. Here we go. Whoosh, whack. 420 points. That's in the inner wing. Do again. Just outside the centre for 500 points. Just outside the centre for 422 points. It looks like this dartboard doesn't really work like the regular dartboards we have, where it's, you know, there's 20 numbers around the edge, there's the inner wing for triple points, outer wing for double points. Most of it has single points, and then you've got the semi-ball for 25 points, and the bullseye for 50 points. Which means, oddly enough, you get a triple 20, which means the bullseye isn't the most points. But you're not. And also in this, rather than aiming to get a particular, to go up to 501 points, which means you can't just, you know, keep aiming for triple 20 all the time, because otherwise you'd go over and lose. Instead, it gets complicated near the end, and you have to do a bit of math. But anyhow, it's different here. Apparently, it's just your points are the closer you get to the middle, the more points you get. So it works more like an archery contest than the dartboards that you'll find in pubs across England and presumably other places. I don't know, I haven't really been to many pubs outside England. Or whatever they have as an equivalent. Assume they have dartboards in other places? And bars, perhaps? Yeah, not just pubs, but largely in pubs. It's different here, yeah, it's just the closer you get to the middle, the more points you get. And you want to get as many points as possible. And also, apparently, it's got some very, very fine lines on it. So you can get incredibly fine degrees of pointness. About, I don't know, it could be... let's see. Let's say the... let's be generous and make the dartboard a metre across. That's actually very large for a dartboard, but it makes it so you can fit more little lines in. Okay, if you do that and you get really fine lines as close as possible, then maybe you could have 1,000 different points in it. Not sure how you can get over 1,000 points, but because you could roll 1,000 and get the 52 bonus. Maybe there's just some sort of bonus points for something. Alright, anyway, held Art 9. Bonus of 58, agility plus 38, luck plus 20. For Schwack, just outside the centre, 699 points. Bonus of 60, 20 from agility, 10 from luck. Don't 20 from luck. For Schwack, 1,040 points. The iron-haired missile whistles through the air and lodges itself in the dead centre of the target for 1,040 points. That brings my total score to 6,576.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
As the next player moves up to collect your 10 darts you've just thrown, you step back to momentarily admire your handiwork. I'm guessing all 10 darts are still in the board? Maybe that... Maybe that's how you get the few extra points, because you get more points if they're all in the same... They're all in the same pizza slice of the dartboard, maybe. Just a few more points. Just a couple, but it adds up. It adds up. And it's very tight. I've got to save my game. You've recently achieved a new best score. You need to save the game before you can again throw darts. Okay, I'll be doing that. Leave the tavern. Oh, I can save just outside the tavern. Handy. Alright, enter the other lair. Throw some darts. View the record. And... am I on this? 6. Oh, I'm just below the range. I'm 6,576. And the lowest score on the record is... Wonga from the adventurer lists of roads with 6,606 points. Alright, I mean, if I got certain bonuses from some reason, I probably would have got that. Oh well. Yeah, and the top score is Ethicion from the Wasser of Black Crow. Who scored 9,023 points, which is a long way ahead of the next one. I guess they got lucky or something, because I don't think that their stats can't really be higher, because everybody has 20 in the relevant stats by now. That's just how it goes. Right, okay, we got Sir the Shore. Is there any of my guys? Oh, Zoop. Zoop is there with 7,547. I'm gonna, do a little Control F to find. Oh, we got Hyper Dude. That's one of mine with 7,484. Nope, only two of my characters have scored high enough to be on the record. And that means most people who have played this are not on the record. Which is nice. Which means that Probably hundreds of different people have went to my tavern. Isn't that nice? This is very nice. All right, converse with Triobor. Triobor looks away from the current round of darts and greets you with a nod. You enjoy tossing the darts around, he says. I might be willing to teach you a few tricks, if you could help me out just a bit. Real tricks. If you must know. Interested? Well, okay, I am interested. I probably might never throw darts here again, but I'm interested. Trollobor rises from his stool and draws you aside, where he speaks in a hushed tone. You learn that nearly two years ago, he loaned a special statue of his to an adventurer barking on a quest to slay a fearsome carnage crawler that makes its lair in a cave in the Trollneck region of southern Thekwood. He tells you that the adventurer never returned from the excursion and was, by all accounts, devoured by a carnage crawler he had sought to slay, a fearsome specimen known throughout the adventuring set as Feaster. The lad to whom I lent the bag isn't the first, and won't be the last who becomes a meal for that fiend, he says, scowling as he references Feaster. I'd very much like to get that satchel back, for I'm not sure how much hope there is to be found in such an ocean. Unless someone like you would consider such a task. When you inquire about the lost satchel, a faint smile creeps across Trilobar's face. Trilobar seems reluctant to reveal too much about the satchel, providing only sketchy details about the lost sack and his reasons for desiring its return. You learn the bag, which claims is magical in nature, benefits different bearers in different ways. In the case of the man who last took it, I was certain would allow him to pull off his tricky task, he says, shaking his head. It is now plain to see, is it not? He never came out of Feaster's lair, and neither did my satchel. The thought of it just lying somewhere in a place like that. Horrific. Horrible. The old man sighs and tells you that if you could manage to venture into the carnage crawler's lair and retrieve the satchel, he would gladly teach you some dart-throwing tricks. And just to bring you up to speed, lawbook entry for Carnage Crawler. These massive, many-legged arthropods prowl caves and other dark, out-of-the-way places in search of dead and decaying flesh on which to feast. Their cavernous circular mouths are ringed with razor-sharp teeth. The exoskeletons of carnage crawlers are exceedingly strong and are sometimes used in the crafting of various pieces of armour. Ooh, nice. Alright, so I could accept the task or decline the task. Of course, if I decline the task, I'll just accept it later. Or I'll find out I can't accept it later, and then I'll just quit without saving and accept it later. So I'm going to accept the task because that's stuff to do. It's an adventure. Accept the task. Trollobor smiles and nods when you tell him that you accept the task. Knew that I'd figured you out, he says. You bring me that satchel and I'll show you some tricks with those darts. We'll have you near the top of the record in no time at all. You mark my words. Well, it would, but this is some sort of pan-dimensional record, which has the scores of adventurers from an entirely different worlds and timelines, which does make it very hard to get on top. The old man spends the next small while detailing for you the exact location of Feaster's lair. A cave in the Troll Neck region of Thekwood, in eastern Tysa. A bit more than just a hop from here, I'm afraid, he says. But you're not a stranger to travel, I'm quite mistaken. My best advice to you, my friend, is to avoid tangling with Feaster altogether, if possible. Find the satchel and get yourself out of there. Carnage crawlers are nasty things in general, but Feaster, based on what I've heard, is something else entirely. Trollobor describes the satchel, telling you it's a large leather bag emblazoned with a bright yellow letter R. Letter R, like Wakamakora? Was this leather bag stolen off Wakamakora? He's not the only person with a letter R in his name, which he could put on things, but like he's the only one who would make the letters so big and obvious. But it could just be a coincidence. I'd prefer if you didn't ask what meaning is attached to the R, he says. But there, now you know what it looks like. Trollobor thanks you for agreeing to try and recover his satchel from Feaster's lair, and again warns you to take care. How you go about things is up to you, of course, he says. But there's no need for unnecessary heroics. All I want is that satchel. And for you to return here in one piece so I can teach you some tricks with darts, right? You bid Trollobor farewell, promising you'll do what you can to attempt to retrieve his satchel from the cave. I've no doubt you will do your very best, he says, promptly returning his attention to the current round of darts, which immediately earns the thrower a burst of his biting criticism. Look for the adventure titled Feaster's Lair in Troll Neck in Eastern Tysa. Alright, a new adventure has been unlocked. Well, two new adventures have been unlocked. And all I had to do was wander around a pub for a bit. How about that? Yes. Don't I have a lovely pub? And you can compete in the archery contest as many times as you want, but you've got to wait 1 hour between contests. Presumably because so many people were queuing up to have a go. And also it's presumably to stop people and for a bit of a more duelist explanation, it's so that you don't have people just spamming throwing the darts for about 3 hours and getting utterly sick of it. Or perhaps someone setting up some sort of bot to spam the thing so they can get on top of the record and get nothing of value. Nothing of value at all. You don't gain anything from these throwing your darts. It's just if you throw one round of darts, you unlock this little quest we've just started. Which is definitely something, but you don't get anything from throwing them again. But you do it because you make number bigger. And everyone likes to make number bigger. It's one of the primary drivers of human civilization. It's people's desire to make number bigger. Alright, but say farewell to Trollobor for now. I can move around the womb. While moving around the womb, you spot a young man seated on a stool in the corner, strumming a mandolin and singing to a group of patrons gathered around her. As the song concludes, the bard tips her plumed hat to the onlookers, several of whom toss gold tokens into a wooden bucket at the foot of her perch. Ooh, there's something curious about this mandolin. Adabar's mandolin, a magnificent engraved spruce instrument, bears an intricate engraving across its face that depicts a castle silhouetted against a full moon. Very nice. Approach the bard and request a song. The bard looks up as you approach and winks, flashing you a crooked friendly smile. He introduces himself as Illibar, placing notable stress on each syllable of his name. "I know an adventurer when I see one," she says. "How about a song, a yarn? Anything in particular strike your fancy? Here. How about one of these? Your woman names three songs, and let us if you'd like to hear, like her to play one of them." Request illustrious pirate's tome. Request the anvil, the otter, and the scroll. Request the skulking coins yarn. I could also ask her if she knows any other songs. What else do you know? You ask Edibar if she knows any other songs. The young woman rolls her eyes and smiles. Of course, she says, drawing a mandolin. "I know more songs than there are grains of sand in the sea. What about one of these?" The woman names three more songs. "Hall and the Wolf," "Jesting Silk Scorpion's Loon," "Belt and the Cowl." You know what? "Jesting Scorpion's Loon." Let's hear that. Elibar, masterfully strumming her mandolin and singing with a clear, well-honed voice, embarks on a rendition of "Jesting Scorpion's Loon," which gradually draws a sizable gathering of patrons. The song, a meandering, jaunty composition that invokes a strong emotional response from all within earshot, plays to a well-executed crescendo before gliding through to its dramatic conclusion. When the song concludes, Elibar rises from her perch and bows, as several of those gathered around her applaud and toss gold tokens, although I suspect many of these gold tokens aren't actually gold. Probably some of them will be silver. In fact, probably most of them will probably be, won't be bullion, they'll be billion, which is where you have just a little bit. Of the precious metal, but probably most of them will be overwhelmingly copper. It's just because gold is expensive, even in small amounts, because there just ain't that much of it, and it's an absolute pig to get. Unless you're an adventurer, in which case it's just bash monsters for a bit. In fact, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Maybe all these adventurers, that's probably why we have a gold standard currency now. That's all gold, rather than gold being this rare thing which is usually only broken out for the big purchases, while you use copper coins for your normal day-to-day things and silver coins for your fancy stuff. But anyway, I can toss one gold token, 5 gold tokens, or 10 gold tokens. Or it's gold because, well, that's the standard currency in just fantasy worlds. Because, of course, the GM is a fantasy writer, not an economist and not a numismatist. So he's not going to really spend his time explaining... explaining the 17 different denominations of the currency, the ratios between them, particular designs that are common on each type of coin, the weight and sizes of each kind, and also how these all factor into common purchases. No, we just assume gold exists, it's the currency, you buy things with it. Don't look too closely, just assume things will work out. Alright, anyway, so I can cross 1, 5 or 10, toss 10 gold tokens into the bucket. Your money pouch is 10 gold, 10 gold tokens lighter. Elabar winks at you and flashes a crooked smile. Extremely generous of you, thank you, she says. Let me know if you'd like to hear something else. But I'm profound pleasure to play for you again. Request another song. Certainly, says, casually strumming her mandolin. How about one of these? Yeah, some of my favourites. Elabar rattles off the titles of three songs. A bruised portal, a leaping dragon, twisted spirit and the flattened spear. A bruised portal. Elabar, massively strumming her mandolin and singing a soft, clear, well-honed voice, embarks on a magician of a bruised portal, which gradually draws into a sizable group of patrons. The song, a lengthy, morose composition that invokes a strong emotional response from many within earshot, plays to a well-executed crescendo before driving through to its dramatic conclusion. Now, even though the song was omissionally written by a temperance movement to describe the lore of alcoholism as a magical portal to a never realm of doom, people kind of didn't get the metaphor or just didn't care. And he just liked the song anyway, and often listened to the song while drinking, much to the great annoyance of the temperance people who made the song, so people didn't drink. The bruised portal will cast you into the deepest depths. So stay away from the targets and the bruise and the hammer tong. Just stick with paleo instead, and you will not be cast into the deepest depths of the worstest place there is. If you take from the tankards and enter the bruise portal. Something like that. Honestly, I'm literally making up on the spot. I'm missing several verses. It's actually really long. Most people kind of forget most of the verses. It's like the English national anthem, where people only know the first verse and the last verse and the kind of forget the middle bits, which kind of just drag on, so they're usually skipped out. When the song concludes, Elabar rises from her perch and bows as several of those gathered around her applaud and toss gold tokens into the bucket at the foot of the scales. Alright, 5 tokens this time. Very generous of you, thank you. Let me know if you'd like to hear something else. Be a pleasure to play for you again. Another song! Certainly. She says, strumming her mandolin. How about one of these? They're some of my favourites. Elabar quickly rattles off the titles of 3 songs. Ode to the Rusty Boar's Medallion. The Fang, the Bucket and the Bolt. The Wound, the Beggar and the Huntsman. Ode to the Rusty Boar's Medallion. Elabar, massively strumming her mandolin and singing with a soft, clear, well-honed voice, embarks on a rendition of Ode to the Rusty Boar's Medallion, instantly draws to a large group of patrons. The song, a long, mirthful ballad that invokes a strong emotional response from many within earshot, plays to a well-executed crescendo before gliding through to its dramatic conclusion. Okay, what is this about? Ode to the Rusty Boar's Medallion. What could that be? It's all about a goblin, you see. A goblin magic that's conjured up this gigantic metallic ball for reasons that would destroy cities and things to be used as a siege weapon. And anyhow, this was all this was powered by a medallion. And anyhow, the thing is, various stuff happened, and this medallion was lost. And then later on, it was lost, and it ended up in a tomb or a cave or something. I don't know. I'm making it up on the spot. And so, anyhow, anyway, a lot of time has passed. And now there's a necromancer running amok who has this impenetrable fortress. And hey, there's this device that's really good at knocking down fortresses. And you see the rusty boar, which is what the siege weapon has become. It's rusty, but apparently, according to the legends, the medallion doesn't just control it, it also restores it somehow. So this medallion, they had to go into this, I don't know, probably something. Anyway, an epic quest commences to collect the rusty boar's medallion, and then you can use the medallion to activate the rusty boar, and whoever holds the medallion can control the boar. That's what the legends say. And then use this to make a hole in the necromancer's fortress, and then you can charge in there and take out the necromancer. That's what the ode to the rusty boar's medallion is about. I'm entirely making it up. And my phone's being silly, but I'm going to ignore it. Oh, or maybe not. Well, it's back, it's back. I could cut this out, but I'm not going to. As the song, when the song concludes, Elabar rises from her perch and bows. Several of those gathered around her applaud and toss gold tokens into the bucket at the foot of the stool. What, just one gold token this time? Elabar winks at you and flashes you a crooked smile. I appreciate this, yes. Let me know if you'd like to hear something else. I'll just bid her farewell and leave. Okay, an adventure has been unlocked. It's called Fire and Flame. The man sneers as he whips his head in your direction, his dark eyes blazing with the fire that seeps from his fingertips. Anyway, go back. We are now at 56 minutes, so... Okay, in the next episode, we'll do the two adventures we just unlocked. These are formal adventures. And in the interim, Sir Croakington will be staying near the... will be hanging out near the other lair. I'm not sure if the other lair has any beds, but... All right, Sir Croakington is also a... What kind of woodsman? He's also a master woodsman, in fact. No, not a master woodsman. Train... Sir Croakington is a Grandmaster Woodsman. So he should still have no difficulty finding some sort of shelter around here. That's just how it is. So there isn't any beds nearby. Won't matter. She'll find something. Alright, yep. Yeah. And the wooden sign message hasn't changed. Okay, anyway, that'll be what we do next week. Well, probably not next week. Probably sooner than that anyway. Until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
Gamers and watch lovers, stay frosty. We've got some covert intel ready. Movement, the official timekeeper of the highly anticipated Call of Duty Black Ops 6, is set to release a special edition Black Ops 6 watch and accessory collaboration. Shop the design seen in and inspired by the game. From the same military-style field watch that Troy Marshall wears inside the campaign, to aviator sunglasses pulled from CIA operative Russell Adler's in-game look. This collaboration brings the aesthetics of the new Black Ops 6 story straight to your wrist and wardrobe. It even arrives with custom packaging and a free gift with your purchase. A Movement and Call of Duty Black Ops 6 bottle opener keychain. According to the Wall Street Journal, Movement is on the path to becoming a heritage brand, while Gear Patrol hails their automatic watches as mechanical masterpieces. Own a piece of gaming history. Shop the exclusive special edition collaboration at mvmt.com/bo6. That's mvmt.com/bo6.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.